For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. From climate change to foreign policy, and from economics to censorship, this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Welcome to the Mark Morano Show, coming at you live on TNT Radio. We have an action-packed show for you today as King Charles, the climate king, is gone through his, I guess you'd call it the coronation this weekend in UK, in London. And we're going to talk a lot about his past history with the climate and what they expect being a new climate king. We are also going to talk all the latest on EV vehicles, Ford losing $60,000 a vehicle. We're going to talk environmental justice, and we are going to talk about the warm list, something I haven't talked about yet on this show. A list of, I believe it was over 600 things, caused by global warming. We'll go through some of those and have some fun. And there, it's a legitimate list, meaning it's all based on peer-reviewed studies. And many of them are, of course, opposite predictions. I'm going to give you an update on environment, social governance, and how we're actually fighting back on the Great Reset through all the states. It's an amazing thing to watch. And we're going to talk about kids eating bugs. We're going to talk about bug milkshakes, not making any of that up. And we'll be talking about the you'll go nowhere and be happy. And also the end of the COVID declaration of emergency. In fact, I think I'll start with that. The COVID emergency that was declared, and I was going to say March of 2020, but I think it was actually declared much earlier than that. Maybe it was that right early March by the World Health Organization. It could have also been February or January, but I just, yeah, that specific designation. Anyway, after 3 years plus, they finally lifted COVID as an emergency. And of course, the United States just ended our vaccine requirement for international travelers. And this was an insane beginning, any kind of vaccine mandate, number one. But number two, the idea that we were one of the last holdouts, I'd have to look at the list. I don't think there was anyone, at least any major industrialized Western country, that was requiring vaccines for entry as though they actually worked, as though they were actually a thing, as though it actually made any sense, as though we weren't requiring them at the southern border for anyone who came in illegally. I mean, this is just, it was nuts. But the Biden administration was forced to end this vaccine mandate. The Biden administration has also been forced to end the COVID emergency declaration, which I'm actually shocked by. We're still living under the 9/11. I think that's what we have to work on next, is to end the 9/11 terrorist emergency threat declaration from 2011. It was a couple days after, or a day after, the 9/11 terror attacks that then George W. Bush declared that. And of course, this gives huge powers to the executive branch, unelected, unaccountable. And of course, it leads to insane enforcement of things like the Patriot Act. It's one of the reasons we had parents at school board meetings protesting the critical race theory and COVID lockdowns and transgender ideology, declared domestic terrorist by the Biden administration, using this same idea of the what was incorporated under the Patriot Act. Of course, Patriot Act was voted on, but in conjunction with, and it was actually passed by Congress, sadly, but it was abused by these, under these emergency declarations, the powers that they can just sort of grant themselves. And don't ever think, well, we have a constitution, the judges will stop it. You know, it took a Trump-appointed judge over 2 years to stop the unconstitutional mask mandates on airplanes and trains and buses from the federal government. The CDC is not a legislative body. And this is the biggest thing we have to go forward. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya of Stanford, who I've met at a conference, was on Fox News last night, and he literally laid it out. He just said it bluntly. He actually stated it very clearly that unless we do major reforms of public health, of emergency declarations, we are literally in the same boat we were in March of 2020. We can be locked down again in an instant. Mayors, governors, presidents, and globally, prime ministers, whoever you talk about, can lock us down once again, following the Chinese model. And they showed some great clips of Tedros from the World Health Organization back in January and February of 2020, literally praising China as the model for which we should follow for COVID. And in fact, it was the most effective, renowned pandemic response in world history. The idea is you lock your citizens down and you use tyranny and force and threats to keep everyone from moving and isolated. And this is where it all began, of course. And the key is, it's not like, oh, COVID's over, we can move on. Oh, I'm happy that's over. The next virus comes along, be it natural, lab, they are going to do the exact same thing again. There's nothing to stop them. And I repeat that, nothing has been done. And so what Dr. Jay Bhattacharya was talking about was literally reforming public health, reforming the way they give advice, reforming the way they have authority, taking away this idea that the CDC can become your landlord and issue, not make you pay rent. CDC can make you wear masks, all through these executive decrees through the federal government and other agencies. This is what we need to stop. And we need to also, he actually likened it to the Space Shuttle Challenger. This would have been 1986. I remember because I was playing a football game, tackle football, no pads, no helmets. This was back in 1986, January. We were playing with a bunch of kids from high school. We played on a Saturday, but it wasn't an organized league. Anyway, we were out playing. I remember someone saying the Space Shuttle crashed. This was, of course, the one with Christina McAuliffe, who was the school teacher, all the hype and media publicity, and it was a very sad story. But anyway, that crashed, and it turned out to be an O-ring that they were later able to figure out. Well, they were able to figure that out. And a lot of that, by the way, if you remember, if the great Warren Brooks, Washington Times writer, was able to figure out and that these O-rings were done for environmental sustainability reasons, that they had used a cheaper product or a different product over environmental concerns, and that may have led to the death of this crew and the explosion of the Challenger. Well, anyway, what Jay Bhattacharya was saying was that they had a guy named Richard Feynman, a philosopher, a scientist, who literally led an investigation, a red team, blue team exercise, into what went wrong. And based on that comprehensive, independent analysis, NASA has made reforms and ensured their safety and has really changed the culture at NASA and really prevented a lot more accidents and made it a much better agency when it comes to when it comes to space and technology and engineering. By the way, NASA is not a much better agency when it comes to climate. They're just taken over by ideologues, and they're just basically doing the bureaucratic capture nonsense and towing the party line. And they have people in charge who wanted to, James Hansen was the former lead NASA climate scientist who wanted to arrest, who got arrested half a dozen times, and he wanted the world to follow, endorsed a book suggesting ridding the world of industrial civilization was the way out of the climate crisis. And then, of course, the current guy that replaced James Hansen is Gavin Schmidt. He is completely political. This is their top scientist, completely political, arguing for carbon taxes, and just a narrative guy that if you disagree, you don't exist. He refuses to debate. He was on a TV show. He wouldn't even appear in the same soundstage with Dr. Roy Spencer, another climatologist who used to be with NASA. He would walk off the set and come back on. You can actually watch these clips from a John Stossel Fox News interview where Gavin Schmidt and NASA sits there, and then he sees Roy Spencer coming, so he walks away off the set, and then Roy Spencer talks, and Roy Spencer leaves, and then Gavin Schmidt will come back on. That's the kind of level that they abhor debate. And anyway, what they figured out though with this NASA study was that all of the problems that the space shuttle had. So what Dr. Jay Bhattacharya was saying, we need the same thing for public health, where they failed. How they basically, and I'm going to extrapolate on what Dr. Jay Bhattacharya of Stanford said on Fox News, but we need a independent review of how they rushed a vaccine, and under the idea that, well, if there's any effective medication, an order of vaccine for emergency use, there can't be any effective medication. Well, obviously there were, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, I guess at least $100 billion involved in vaccine incentives, profits, that they weren't going to allow any potential treatment to be tried because then it would jeopardize the vaccine being rushed to market without proper testing. And you can actually go back and see Anthony Fauci lamenting a few years ago that these mRNA vaccines wouldn't be able to, it would take so long and they're so far away and it's such a shame. So they were just waiting for the moment to literally push these vaccines on the public. But so that was a huge error. So you had the absurdity of Walgreens and CVS not filling doctors' prescriptions for things like ivermectin because corporately they weren't going to go along with it. That was anti-science, even though they were assigned by doctors. And even though many studies have shown they were effective treatments for many people. And I'm not going to sit here and go on about ivermectin, but I'm just saying the idea is any potential treatment was going to be poo-pooed because they didn't want it to interfere with the beauty of this vaccine that was going to end the lockdowns, which is the other thing. You can't have, you know, a government-forced shot to end government-forced lockdowns. That's tyranny on top of tyranny. So they need to look at that. They need to look at the whole idea of why we followed a Chinese model on lockdowns. That made absolutely no sense. Why we did mask mandates, how that came about, all the lies and flip-flops on that. We need to go back and say what happened to the flu. We need to go back and say how could they come up with these death counts and why were people with car accidents and gunshot wounds counted as COVID deaths. And they need to go back and look at the vaccine mandates and how the distrust that caused in public health. They need to look at social distancing requirements. They need to look at school closures. They need a comprehensive review, and public health needs to be literally denuded, if that's the right word, taken away all of their ability to ever do this to us, the public, again, both globally in the United States and Australia, in Europe, Canada, New Zealand, sadly. We have to have a reckoning on this. I don't expect one at all. My hope is that, and even though we're not having it, my hope is that we have mass resistance next time. But I did learn the lesson that we can't sit around and wait for people to be outraged. We need to start from day one. Open defiance, organization, media, protests. You cannot just say, all right, well, let's give it a while. Maybe the masses will rise up. We have to help them next time. And there will be a next time and a time after that. They aren't going to give up. This was the greatest boon to the expansion of the state over individual liberty, meaning lockdowns, that we've had in my lifetime. And I repeat that, in my lifetime. And I was born in 1968. So you can see that this is a huge deal. But anyway, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya really nailed it last night. And in short, you know, he was on for only a few minutes, but it was a very good segment. And on that same vein, we had the teachers union leader, Randy Weingarten, here in the United States, called up before Congress. And she literally basically said, I don't remember, I'm 65, my memory's failing me a little bit, but oh, I didn't call for school closures, and I don't know what you're talking about. We had recommendations. We worked so hard to get schools open. Well, I wanted to play you this clip. This is a clip of Randy Weingarten. This is the school union teacher. It's clip number 4. This is her during the COVID lockdowns, beginning in this would be probably March 2020 through 2021, her over and over calling for school closures. And then, of course, she went to Capitol Hill and denied it. But here's clip number 4.
And if people are in high risk, they shouldn't be in school. They should be doing things remotely. Just because Donald Trump wants to take a risk with people who go to bars or beaches, those of us who have spent our life teaching kids are not going to take a risk with kids or with our members' lives.
Remote and hybrid are really the only two ways you can reopen schools safely.
You got to delay school opening because if you don't have the masks, how are you going to be able to do this? There's a huge difference between working in Walmart and working in a school.
That was Randy Weingarten, the teachers union president here in the United States. She was called before Congress this week, and literally pretended she didn't remember any of this, had no knowledge of it. All her recollection was that, hey, she was an advocate for the kids and she wanted to open schools. And yet she literally spent 2.5 years ensuring schools were closed. And the more sinister thing she said was about masks. One of the reasons schools had to stay closed early on was because there wasn't enough masks to go around. And that's Randy Weingarten forcing the masking of kids. And by the way, federal programs like Head Start here in the United States were the last to lift the mask mandate. Some of them as just as recently as a few months ago on kids, on toddlers, on young children. And of course, I don't want to go through the list, but we know all the impacts of the lockdowns, or particularly the mask mandates on kids, verbal, language, sporting, social isolation. And then, of course, the filth of the same mask all day and on the hand. I mean, none of it made an ounce of effing sense. Sorry, I didn't curse, but I wanted to. And this is what passes for public health today in our modern society. It is just, I don't know what to say at this point. It's just so frustrating because the Republican Party needs to be pushing this reforms. In fact, I wish when the Republicans, before they barely won Congress, that one of their action items would have been emergency power / public health reforms. Because without that, we are doomed to repeat this over and over. And of course, the opposite is happening right now. No reforms are coming. Biden administration still pushing this pandemic treaty. World Health Organization very excited about the prospect of global instant lockdowns pushed by Bill Gates scientists. So anyway, that's my COVID lockdown public health update portion of the program. When we come back, we're going to talk about King Charles, and we're going to talk about some of the infamous warm list. But this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT Radio's State of the Nation.
Let me fix that headline for you, everybody. It was thrice deported illegal immigrant thug man murders family next door. There you go. It's a little bit more of a mouthful than Texas man. But you know what I mean? It's like we have stuff like that happening and the media is trying to frame it as, oh, this happened in Texas. So the rest of the nation thinks, oh, those yokels out there in the South, they just shooting each other with the AR-15. No, we have an open border here. We've got thousands of people rushing the border. Title 42 about to end. Something like that happens in our backyard, basically, and the media reports it inaccurately. It's amazing.
Well, pure propaganda. You know how they change up words. They're very good at that. Texas man. And you said thrice. Now, I don't know if this is fact. I heard 4 or 5 times. It's even worse than we're reporting. And this is unbelievable. I find it all even more unbelievable, Brian. They can't find the guy as of the last few minutes. I mean, I haven't checked in the last few minutes, but where could this guy go? Do you think he had some help? Maybe he's over the border. He's back somewhere. I just find it incredible that they can't find him.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Challenging the consensus. This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Mark Morano Show here on TNT. Well, King Charles, I believe it's official now. I think the coronation ceremony has ended. Camilla Parker Bowles, I guess, is officially queen, although I didn't really watch much of it. I had it on in the background, but it just seemed like if she was dubbed queen today, the coronation, I don't know enough about royal family etiquette. It just seemed like that was really downplayed and didn't really notice it. All the emphasis was on the king. So I assume if he dies, she doesn't take over. One of his sons do. So I guess she's not a bloodline queen, so she doesn't count. Again, I'll stop there because my knowledge of royal family etiquette and history is woeful. Anyway, I do know a lot about Prince Charles, now King Charles III, and his climate record. Well, Rupert Darwall did a great article of realenergy.org. And he talked about a lot of my research going back years that I featured in the film Climate Hustle, which came out in 2016. And one of the funniest things about King Charles, and we'll get serious, but we'll in a minute, I'll talk to you about his ties to the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and the whole Great Reset. But before that, let's start with a little humor. Back in 2009, I believe it was, it could have been 2008, but he started with this 100-month tipping point. And Charles has been a climate activist fanatic for decades, going to UN summits, going to World Economic Forum, going into the media, always issuing climate tipping points, talking all about the climate, how we have to sacrifice. He has never sacrificed. He's obviously living in royal palaces. He's obviously flying private jets. He's obviously got entourages with carbon emissions bigger than probably many people's lifetime emissions. So he's the ultimate hypocrite when it comes to that. But it was funny because he actually issued this 100-month climate tipping point back in 2009. And he literally proceeded, and we actually found the video for Climate Hustle. He literally proceeded to count down every few months. There's now, 89 months. We now have 76 months. We now have 62 months. And literally counted it down. And I think it ended in about 2015 or so. And once he was facing that 0 months, a climate tipping point by which the world must act, it was an amazing thing to watch. He literally came out and said, well, at this point, I'm going to add 35 years. And he after the 100 months expired, he pushed it off to, I don't have the exact, I'm trying to see if I can find the exact year, but it was like 2047 or something like that from the 100 month countdown that ended in 2015 or 2016. And if you look at it, given his mom's genetics, he's like 72 or 3 right now, I believe. Given his mom's genetic, who lived to either almost 100 or just at 100, he might be able to make it. That's only 25 more years. As long as he keeps himself healthy, he could make the new, he may actually live long enough to have to extend his 35-year tipping point from his 100-month one expired many years ago. So, and here it is. Let me see if I can find the exact. It's 2015. He extended the 100-month climate tipping point to 35 more years. And I still having trouble. So you have to do the math on that. And I'm not about to right now, but 35 and 15, that would have been, I guess, 2050. So at that point. So anyway, we'll see what happens. If you're all around, we can watch this happen just again. And it was in 2009, I guess 2008, he started the 100-month climate tipping point. All right. But on a more serious note with King Charles, Christopher Monckton, Lord Christopher Monckton, my friend who I just got to spend some time with in London last fall. And of course, I just saw him down in Florida in Orlando at the Heartland Climate Summit. Did a great essay exclusive to Climate Depot, and you can go to climatedepot.com to read this. Lord Monckton on King Charles, quote, "The greatest threat to the world is the communism that the climate king so disastrously espouses," unquote. And that's a great quote from Lord Monckton. And I've had people on Twitter saying, "Communist? You're really calling him a communist?" Well, it absolutely is a form of communism. When you look at his ties to the World Economic Forum, to what the United Nations wants to do, to mastermind our society from above, to make it a permission regulatory society where the government is going to be in charge and unelected bureaucrats in every aspect of your life, from your diet to your appliances to your transportation to your home heating, to whether what you eat, to how your freedom of movement, and of course your entire economy, to your power usage, to your to how your power grid is constructed. According to Vox magazine, Charles is going to be dedicated to himself to be, quote, "the climate change king. He ascends to the throne with a vow to confront a warming world." Take that, climate! Has the climate ever had to fight a king battling its temperatures. We're going to cool the earth. Boom. Take that. I wonder how the climate's going to handle that. Anyway, back to Lord Monckton's analysis, though. Underlying this flummery, lies a serious point. It is obvious to all who see and hear that global warming is not happening like originally predicted by the IPCC. And of course, he's got charts in there that shows the climate model's running way hot. We're now at almost 9 years with no warming. I know it does a stair step and all that. But if you go back to even the late 90s, there really has been no statistically significant warming. So we are in an era where it's always very uncomfortable. And this was the key reason that the climate activists, and I was at the Bali Climate Summit in 2007, and John McCain's aide literally told me on a bus, a UN chartered bus, we were going out to look at, I think it was rice paddies on a UN junket from the conference, about how they're going to start focusing on extreme weather and climate change. And it was very convenient because the temperatures weren't going up as predicted. So they wanted to focus on every bad weather event, what Joe Bastardi, the meteorologist, so aptly termed climate ambulance chasing. A tornado hits your home? Are you been hit by your basement flooded? Well, who are you going to call? We're the climate legal team. We will turn your government Marxist in order to stop that bad behavior of the climate. That's literally what it's all about. So Monckton points out that, and he goes on to say about the trouble with the climate king, Charles, is that he never gets to hear facts such as those outlined above. He hears only what the Thermageddonites from the Thermageddonites. And he also lacks the understanding of the scientific method necessary to work out for himself that the science surrounding global warming panic has utterly collapsed. The greatest threat to the world is not at warmer weather, it's the communism that the climate king so disastrously espouses. So if you want to take a look at that, go to my website, climatedepot.com, and take a look at that article on the climate king. And by the way, Rupert Darwall, who did Cool Energy, really did a good job in that he laid out the whole vision of what King Charles is all about. And he talks about that Charles pushed Sri Lanka into their organic farming experimentation, which literally toppled the government in Sri Lanka. We got to see in real time. What's fascinating lately is all these green dreams, sustainable net zero, which has just been theoretical. All these politicians, I'll limit the Earth's temperature. We'll do this target. We're going to ban this by this year. By this time, all those nebulous dates and for decades they've been talking, they're all coming home to roost. And that's what's happened in Europe. It's what's happened, Sri Lanka. It's what's happening in the Netherlands, where they're in real time, where they were trying to shut down farms and to stop the high yield agriculture. Incredible things. So this, we're seeing in real time how Prince Charles' legacy is already destroying the earth. So it's incredible. And by the way, let me just read you a quote from Rupert Darwall's article. A 2021 paper on extreme forecasts tabulates 79 predictions of climate-caused catastrophe dating back to the first Earth Day in 1970. Charles has a distinction of being the only individual to be featured three times in these 79 predictions, with separate predictions of climate apocalypse. As the paper's co-author points out, alongside Paul Ehrlich, Prince Charles has warned repeatedly of, quote, irretrievable ecosystem collapse. If actions were not taken, repeated the prediction with a new definitive end date, their predictions have repeatedly been apocalyptic, highly certain, and so far, they've always been wrong. Here's hoping the reign of King Charles will be a happier affair than his failed forecasts of climate doom. Long live the king, unquote. That's Rupert Darwall, senior fellow at Real Clear Foundation and author of the book Green Tyranny, a book I highly recommend as well. So we're going to hear a lot now. There's also been two schools of thought on that he'll use his new platform to have even higher climate impact. And then others have said he'll have to temper it a little because he can't be seen. He's got to be more statesmanlike and royalty acting as opposed to the same activist. But we shall see. I can't imagine his life has been devoted to climate change. I just can't imagine him giving up his vision for that and his activism on that. So we shall see. On the same token, along the same lines, because the other thing I was going to mention is he's great friends with Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum. He goes to these World Economic Forums. He has been quoted praising the Great Reset, Build Back Better. King Charles, make no mistake about it. This is a global elitist. This is not a man who's even carrying on a traditional royalty position of the monarchy of England. This is a man who's going well beyond it. And literally, you talk about commoners. This is a man who wants to crush the commoners through his advocacy of groups like the World Economic Forum and make us all a new form of feudal serfdom in the 21st century. And that is, in fact, it's called neo-feudalism, and that's a great title for it. That's not Charles' term. That's what critics call neo-feudalism that Charles espouses, that he wants to impose. As part of that neo-feudalism, we have some updates on the world of bug eating, and this is incredible. In Switzerland, there was a same thing that they did in Australia, same thing that they did in other parts of Europe. These groups come in, activist groups and private companies, probably public-private partnerships trying to make money, and they're all excited, and they want to get kids to eat bugs. Why? Because there's an ick factor, a disgust factor by adults. Kids are more vulnerable. Kids are more easy to manipulate. When they did this in Australian public schools to elementary school kids as young as 8 years old, giving them cricket-based snacks, they actually told the kids to go home and pester your parents that eating bugs is fine and they're high in protein and they're healthier and blah, blah, blah. And of course, they give the kids, these were like a processed cricket powder in fat with barbecue seasoning, like a potato chip. So you would never know it, and you're just eating it, but they're told it's an insect, it's a psychop. So these kids go home, it's how they do it. They're doing this in schools globally now. And right now I wanted to play clip one. This is the kids in Switzerland and how they're feeding them these bugs to get them to essentially go along with this new world of collapsing high-yield agriculture, collapsing traditional livestock meat eating, forcing us to eat fake synthetic meat, and now bugs. Here you go.
The future generation, we need to find solutions right now for a better future because of climate change. Edible insects are a solution right now.
One company in Switzerland is looking to lower its carbon footprint by introducing insects as their flagship sustainable superfood product.
And that company, they've been pushing this. They taste test targeted middle school kids who ate spiced mealworms, crickets dusted with paprika. This was as reported now in the Wall Street Journal. The industry is recruiting consumers whose tastes are still at the larval state, obviously the infant state, which are children. It's called Swiss Insects, an association of companies that sell bugs for human consumption. And by the way, much like solar wind, these companies are going to be relying on mandates, subsidies, net zero goals, shutting down government regulations, shutting down traditional agriculture and livestock. They organized a taste testing at middle schools. For the past 4 years, the company has been touring Swiss schools touting the benefits of eating insects and bringing along samples. And here's the quote from Mr. Oliver from this company. They are young, more open to novelty. You see how that works? Insects are an environmentally source of protein and vitamins and generate a fraction of the greenhouse gases of raising cattle, pigs, and other livestock. Scientists say they are safe to eat, provided they are raised in controlled environments. So yeah, you don't want to go eat your cockroach at your local city diner. That probably wouldn't be controlled enough. But I have no problem. People want to eat insects. Fine. Eat insects, but that's not what this is about. They're trying to psychologically manipulate kids to like eating insects, to accept it, to go home pester their parents. They're shutting down animal agriculture. I've repeated this on the show, but Bill Gates, America's single largest farmland owner in America, publicly stated billions of dollars invested in synthetic lab-grown meat made from stem cells of animals grown in steel vats with additives, processing to make it look the texture and color of real meat and then printed on 3D printers for your dinner. And that's their goal. Their goal is also to make meat rare and expensive treat, which the lockdowns really help. The supply chain issues really help. The climate regulations and net zero really help. Inflation devaluing the dollar really help do that. And this is what they're doing. So their solution now is to get everyone eating bugs because, hey, you could just crank out the bugs. And again, this is about mandates enforcing. And by the way, if you want to eat fake synthetic meat grown in a steel vat, please do it. But just remember that the number, it's your choice, but don't force others and don't put us in situations where we have no choice. And that's really what it boils down to. And you can go back to the vaccine mandates. No one's forcing you to do anything. Oh, you just can't have a job or get on a plane or get your benefits or, oh, by the way, you won't be able to use social media and you won't be able to access your own bank account and you won't be able to have your smart car or your smart meter may shut off and you'll have to suffer through heat waves more, but because you're not going along, but no one's forcing you. It's your choice. You want to have all that. You don't have to do anything. Bill Gates stated goal repeatedly is to get us off animal agriculture. Over and over, he's invested billions. They're now mandating cows with methane, regulating it, adding more and more costs. What does that mean? It means small livestock producers forced out of the business. Oh, wow. Who's going to, well, maybe some other mom and pop and small industry? No. Big corporate agribusiness, billionaires like Bill Gates, countries like China will buy up the meat packing, the livestock, the farmland. And they will tow the Great Reset, World Economic Forum, UN, Net Zero, King Charles, etc., world vision, because they're not going to go at crosshairs with it, whereas the small ones wouldn't. So the more we can just kick out the small industries, the better. And that is really what lockdowns were all about and why the World Health loved it, why the World Economic Forum loved it, why Jane Fonda, the progressive climate activist, said COVID was God's gift to the left. It literally made that vision of the world where you impose all the regulations on small independent businesses, turn them all corporate, huge conglomerate, government, public, private partnership, woke boards, go along with everything. That's what they are dealing with. And that is what's frightening. Now, the next thing was bug milk. This is another example of people pushing these insects on this insect meat. This is called a dairy alternative. This is going to be clip 2, bug milk.
Entomilk is a dairy alternative that we make from black soldier fly larvae. We take the insects and we process it into a dairy alternative that forms a rich and creamy liquid which looks and acts just like dairy. Entomilk is very rich in protein, fat, calcium, iron and zinc, which is really good for you. And it's got a very creamy mouthfeel. The world needs alternatives to survive. Insects are vital for the future of food because they require very little land. They don't damage the environment like livestock. They don't produce greenhouse gases. And they meet the demand for ice cream. The world is going to struggle to produce enough food for the growing population. And I find insects a very viable option.
Can you believe it's made from insects?
Hi, I'm Leah Besser. I live in Cape Town and I make dairy alternatives from insects.
Now, a couple things she said were just flat out wrong. The world needs alternative food to meet this growing population. Wrong, wrong, wrong. However, and this is the thing, we have had Al Gore, the United Nations, climate activists predicting food shortages due to climate change, extreme weather, crop failures, it's all going to happen. Meanwhile, CO2 increases have, according to NASA, greened the earth, increased fertilization, increased crop yields. We are not in danger from any climate threat of reducing food population. However, climate change policies are the greatest threat to food production globally. We see it in the Netherlands. We see it in Europe. We see it coming to the US. We see it in Canada. We see it in Australia, where they're decimating farming with the same attacks on high yield agriculture, going after the nitrogen-based fertilizer, going after methane, going after livestock. This is the threat. Now, I'm going to say something that may surprise you. If technology advances and I can go to a store and I see cow's milk and I see this bug milk that everyone's raving about and there's no harm to human health, I may try it someday. I don't think I would, but I'm not going to try something that's lies. Oh, this is better for the earth, or this is more sustainable, or this is, you know, to prevent food shortages. That's all lies. However, if this is clever, this is a scientific advancement, this tastes good, and you know, it's just as healthy as regular, I might be open to it. But the idea is they're not giving us that choice. Same thing with an electric car. I'd be open to an electric car, potentially, although I like stick shift and just in general, I only drive a stick shift car. But my point is, if they're forcing electric cars by banning gas-powered cars, automatically I'm going to be opposed. The same thing with a vaccine. I might be open. Hey, is this vaccine? Of course, I wasn't to COVID-19. I didn't trust anyone pushing it. There was no way I was going to get it, the vaccine. But if you look at what they're doing, is they're forcing you to do it, or they're creating a situation where you have no choice. It's an offer you can't refuse as they shut down all of the other products. So, but you know, that's just what's going on. This is billions of dollars invested in the insects alternative, billions of dollars in this lab grown fake meat, all depending just the same way solar and wind. Oh my God, solar and wind are doubling and tripling. And oh, look at all the people they're employing. What about the energy they're not producing? What about the unreliable energy? What about the fraction of the energy? What about the fact it takes 79 solar workers to make the energy of one coal plant worker? Equivalent energy. So it just goes back to that whole point. They're setting up a thing where they're going to force us to offer we can't refuse. And it's whether it's EVs, whether it's, you know, interrupted power and shortages, whether it's this food, great food reset, this is what they're up to. And it's an incredible thing. But, you know, I'm sure people, another one last point on insects. Yes. Many societies, cultures have eaten insects, will eat insects, but typically, and studies show, as a country moves on, and a lot of just testimonials of people that I've read about and seen and talking, once a country or a family advances to a certain level of wealth, they don't eat bugs anymore. Bugs might be an option for countries that don't have any other options, but generally they walk away from it just because, you know, there's a lot of factors. Now, you bring science in, you add a lot of sugar and grease and fats and seasoning. I'm sure you can make cardboard taste incredible. Oh, it tastes great. It's pretty much not the criteria. You can make anything taste good. If you hate broccoli, maybe eat chocolate-covered broccoli. Maybe you could survive it. Anyway, this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Kovoy Morich on TNT Radio.
Canadian pastor Archer Pawlowski, who I interviewed some 2 years ago on my podcast, the Canadian Stasi were trying to enter his church and shut him down. And he rightfully yelled at them, "You Nazi communists." That only happens in Nazi and commie regimes. And him and his forefathers lived under those regimes. You know, some people say, maybe he was too harsh. No, he was not too harsh. And judge has found Pawlowski guilty of violating Alberta Critical Infrastructure Defense Act. So he gave a talk to truckers a year ago, and now he's found guilty, and he's going to appeal and stuff, so he can go to jail just for giving a talk to truckers. Get this, Thomas Jefferson University president might even lose his job, who knows, but the fact that he's being investigated by the whole board and administration for simply for liking a tweet from Alex Berenson, you know, the journalist that criticized COVID-1984. So you can lose your job if you like a thought crime tweet just for liking it. And likes are like, you know, I use them as bookmarks, basically. That is where we're at. If you like something, you know, better be careful. You could lose your job.
Kovoy Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's not just a music box. It's a ballerina's castle. It's a place to keep special things. It's noticing the letter. It's hearing it's for her mom. It's the moment you realize a 10-year-old girl has come to terms with her terminal illness. It's telling her how brave she is. It's agreeing to pass the letter on after she's gone. It's not just a music box. It's one of the most important tools we use. Social work with children and families is changing. Join us. Call 0300 123 1220 or search Be the Difference.
You're with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. All right, in our final segment, I wanted to talk a little bit more about updates on what's been going on here. The Biden here in the United States, Biden's Environmental Protection Agency chief says environmental justice is in the agency's DNA. Well, what is environmental justice? It's a nebulous concept. It's an invasion, as in the entire climate debate, identity politics has invaded. In the case of the Biden administration, they're literally saying the suburbs are racist because they were used for white flight from cities when a lot of the African Americans came up from the South to the North, I guess in the 1950s, post-World War II. Highways are being called racist because highways lead white people out of the city to black areas, out to these white racist suburbs. And then they also claim that and I say claim for a very important reason, that if you look at like where the factories and the smokestacks and the chemical plants are, around those, there's all these minority neighborhoods and African Americans. And their implication is that these companies are exploiting the black people and that they would never do this in a white neighborhood. And that's an example of environmental racism. Well, in 1999, I went down to Louisiana, the Shintech company. It's the exact same thing. And it was all African American population. And I did extensive interviews, and I also did research. I also interviewed an expert from the Brookings Institute. And a couple things. The most important thing about this aspect of environmental racism is, in the case, at least in Louisiana, the company put these in an outskirts of these chemical plants on the outskirts of the town. Now, there's obviously pollution, there's waste, there's fear of long-term public health concerns being exposed if there's any kind of spills, leaks, etc. But here's the key. And I interviewed an African-American scholar on this who'd done research on this because he was worried about whether environmental racism, he claimed environmental racism didn't exist because these companies bought this land, which then became devalued. Anytime a big production plant does something on a piece of land, the nearby property is going to lose value. Who's going to move to that nearby property? It's going to generally be lower income, higher disproportionately minority, particularly in Louisiana. So that these clusters of poor people around all these plants and chemicals productions were done because the land was cheaper and more affordable, not because like the plant said, okay, where can I build this? Let's build it where black people are, or let's build it where minorities are. And that was one of the things. And then there's a whole thing about Cancer Alley and whether that actually, the statistics can support the concept. It seems like an intuitive concept if you're around. Certainly something like the East Palestine chemical spill, the dose makes the poison. Those people were exposed to high levels in short periods. Well, short periods meaning high levels all at once. And we're not talking about long-term exposure, but necessarily we're talking about the short-term, which I think is the greater threat of that high-level exposure, not low-level long-term. And that, of course, seeped into their water, air. That's a very serious concern. But the issue of Cancer Alley, the original, what's her name? Julia Roberts played her, Erin Brockovich. Idea of the Cancer Alley, people like Michael Fomento, others have debunked that. And one of the ways you can tell whether these Cancer Alley claims and anecdotal evidence, the people come up with, oh, I had this kind of cancer, so-and-so had that. And there's like many different types of cancers. Well, if you were in a specific area with a chemical spill or exposure, it would be something that was similar type cancers, usually a chemical or something reacts. It causes one type of cancer over and over in people across all age groups and other spectrums. And that's one of the things you can tell something's off when they're claiming multiple different types of cancer, unrelated, but people got it. And that's a whole topic for another day with an expert I could bring in. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I'm saying a lot of those stats, kind of like COVID death results, have been juiced and politicized and statistically played around with. So on that regard, that's where that's going. But anyway, so they're turning the whole agency into an identity politics agency at the Biden administration. And it's just nuts, because it's just another way that they can do grievances and cause more disharmony and transfer more funds and wealth through the government. All right, I was going to play clip three here. Now, this is, I have an audio clip about UN, Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab talking about basically you'll go nowhere and be happy. This is Dr. Mike Yeadon, who really lays out very well what the agenda of this great reset, basically, particularly as it relates to transportation. So let's play that right now, clip three.
So just as I come to a close, unfortunately, I think this is just the beginning. I've learned when people tell you what they're going to do, don't ignore them. So when the UN and Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab tell you that they've got a UN 2030 plan with sustainable development goals, I think there are 17 or 21 of them, and every one of them says you won't be traveling, you won't have a private car, we won't be using international shipping to move goods around, there won't be any flights except military or perhaps very rich people, you won't own anything and you'll be happy, you probably won't live in your own house, you'll be using much less energy for everything, including heating, manufactured goods, and so on. When they tell you that, you should assume that they're serious about it. And so I think COVID has been part one of a multi-act play that's going to take 10 years that will destroy the liberal democracies completely. We've already, if you think you're living in a democracy, now ask yourself who you could vote for that would change this, because I don't think there's anyone you can vote for anywhere that would is guaranteed things. So I don't have an answer, but I'm telling you, I think we're sliding down through the gates of hell. I'm speaking out. There's nothing in it for me. I've lost lots of money, all my friends. I'm away from my home and family. And I'm speaking out because I am absolutely sure what I've told you is substantially true.
That was Dr. Mike Yeadon, who was an ex-Pfizer scientist and then later became an anti-vaccine mandate hero. He's a scientific researcher, vice president at Pfizer, who left just last year, late 2021, I believe. And that is his view now. He was literally red-pilled overnight, working for Pfizer, seeing all that. And of course, this is all related to everything else we just talked about today, especially about King Charles, because King Charles is involved with all this whole plan. And when he says you won't be traveling, you won't have a private car, major news reports just in the last week from Bloomberg News showing that because of climate compliance laws, the average person isn't going to be able to afford airline flights, and that this is resulting in a demand reduction, which is bringing a smile to the climate activists. Same thing with cars. You have everything from 15-minute cities, the ban on gas-powered cars, which will create intentional car shortages, the lack of car loans. He really lays it out. That's a name to keep. In fact, I might try to get him as a guest on my show here. Dr. Mike Yeadon, remember him, ex-Pfizer scientist, vice president who left the show. All right, before time runs out, I wanted to go over this warm list that I promised you. It is hilarious. I just put it up on Climate Depot today, on this weekend. Take a look at it. Everything from ISIS to hate speech to babies in the womb to obesity to murders murders and rape are all blamed on climate change. And interestingly enough, Amazon, the dry season gets greener, Amazon dry season gets browner, avalanches may increase, avalanches may decrease, bird migrations may be longer, bird migrations shorter, boreal forests decrease, boreal forests increase, locust swarm when it gets cooler, locust swarm when it gets warmer, coral atolls to sink, coral atolls to rise, Earth's rotation to slow down, Earth's rotation to speed up, Africa to get less rain, Africa to get more rain. Studies that come out that literally blame whatever happens on climate change or predict something that may happen, and it's always the opposite. And if it's the opposite, then they predict the opposite. So they, it's like predicting a big game. You predict both outcomes, you're always right. And it's incredible. Go to the thing. I have all the sites, the original peer-reviewed studies. It's up at Climate Depot right now if you want to have some fun looking at the warm list, a complete list of things caused by global warming. Anyway, this has been the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.